Welcome to the AI Asia Pacific Institute podcast. The rise of AI presents important legal and ethical challenges for society. In this podcast, we invite leaders from different industries and creators of new AI to debate the big questions. This is the AI Asia Pacific Institute podcast. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. You can listen when you are taking walks, you can listen while you are cooking, whenever you can. The best thing, Audible is offering AI Asia Pacific listeners 2 free audiobooks with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to the link shared in the podcast description and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe to see the link. Then, download your free title and start listening. It's that easy. Looking for book recommendations? We highly recommend Weapons of Math Destruction by Kathy O'Neill. This is our last episode of Season 1. Join us for a whole new season starting January 2021. Subscribe now wherever you're listening. Matthew is a global leader in the operationalization of AI ethics and responsible use of frontier technology. He is founder and CEO of Technotions, a consultancy that provides practical advisory to C-suite board and AI leadership on embracing trusted use, as well as a member of the Cantalus Group, an innovative boutique consulting group helping business and policy leaders harness the opportunities, new risks and trade-offs with AI and other frontier technologies. Matthew has over 20 years of experience of advising leadership teams on technology-driven transformation at some of the world's most respected enterprises, as well as startups, SMEs, and government organizations. He engages with the World Economic Forum's Artificial Intelligence and Machine Learning Platform, co-develops standards for ethical use of AI at the IEEE, and is a member of the Global Governance of AI Roundtable. Matthew also provides expertise to the Australian Human Rights Commission, the Australian Federal Government, and the European AI Alliance on issues of AI policy and the intersection with social license to operate. With you now, our host for this podcast, Kelly Forbes.
Hi, Matthew, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good to be here.
Great. So I think you have a lot to share with us around, bringing practice to AI in terms of in the space of AI and ethics. So can you share with us a little bit about your background and how you got started to work in this intersection?
Yeah, it's a fairly long story. I'll try and keep it somewhat brief. It gives away your years when you kind of have a long story. My background originally was technology. So in the 90s, I did computer science at university. And back then, artificial intelligence, it's called neural networks at the time, was, a bit more theory because we didn't have the computing power to actually do the stuff. So I remember, we used to build hot field nets that would take the entire lab. But at that point already, I was kind of really fascinated by this technology. Unfortunately, the technology took a couple of decades to catch up. So in the meantime, I've had a bit of a journey in my career. And that journey has been, mostly about how organizations embrace technology. So, and that wasn't the planned journey, actually. It was just how my career turned out. So it started off with that whole technical project management thing, which is an approach many organizations take to putting technology in place. The idea that if you have a blueprint and the blueprint's kind of good enough and you have a project plan and the project plan is rigorous enough that, this stuff just works and everyone will be happy using this technology and everyone embraces it and, happily ever after. And of course, that's not realistic, and that's not the case. So I've kind of been on the journey since that point to try and figure out why that didn't work. And maybe I've come to some conclusions. Maybe I kind of got plenty of learning to go still. The next stage was very much around the Taylorism, the idea that we can explain people's jobs in terms of boxes with lines between them, you know, process engineering, Six Sigma, and that really popular sort of way of looking at the organization of work in organizations, companies, etc. And again, that's a slightly different lens that people see the organization of work through. They sort of try to explain how the technology enables people to do their little box in these diagrams a little bit faster. And, you know, by doing so, if they can explain how this box works a bit better, then presumably everyone will want to do this and use this technology. And again, that's incredibly naive. And it's not something that kind of really represented how people use technology in the organization. So I then had some fun going through the stages of change management transformation. And this was around the time that outsourcing became really popular and, you know, collaboration software, et cetera. So through those stages of how organizations see themselves and how they organize themselves, I've also been able to see a lot of the frameworks and a lot of the governance and the risk management and, you know, legal and regulatory management, policy frameworks, et cetera, and those kind of structures that are put in place. And what that's given me is a really good view to what happens to all these structures when you try to change the way people do their jobs. So we had it a few times now. We've had things like the internet being introduced, you know, how it went from being sort of like this vague sort of a thing that other people did to actually being central to loads of business strategies. And we've had it also with sort of like, you know, mobile data, et cetera, and also social networks. And, you know, every time one of these revolutions comes along, there's an assumption that it kind of will just organically fit into organizations. And it actually turns out it's a lot of work. It's not a simple thing to get these kind of technologies in. And you know, my experience over the past couple of decades has been that in these situations, everyone has their own sort of view on how these things can be implemented, be it the project managers, the process engineers, be it the strategy experts, et cetera, the technologists who actually put the stuff in place. And in reality, it's actually a combination of all these things. There is no kind of single lens through which to view an organization. And as such, there's no single sort of set of interventions that are going to get these things implemented. You know, so we see this kind of thing where there's assumptions that if you kind of do a reorganization and put a new operating model in, that suddenly everyone's going to enjoy that operating model. And that's just obviously not true. But we also see it with things like corporate behaviors, where an HR team will say, okay, here's a list of 10 corporate behaviors that are kind of a little bit vague and, you know, undeniably positive. And they, you know, it's difficult. Yeah, it's exactly. And it's difficult to figure out, well, why is no one embracing these kind of things, like be really cool to each other and, you know, be positive and proactive?
Because that's very similar to, sorry to interrupt, that's very similar to the principles we have for AI ethics, right?
Funny you should mention that. That was a bit of a lead-in, wasn't it? So yeah, and exactly, this is important because the current challenges facing organizations with AI, this new technology, has a lot of similarities in these previous changes, but for my money is you know, a lot more significant. But the key here is it's not a single team problem. So this isn't down to the technical team. It's not a legal issue. It is not you know, the issue for the risk management team only to deal with. This is something that spans the whole organization. And you know, we've been here before. So if we look at the internet, when that was introduced, and I'm giving away my age here, if we look at when the internet was introduced, which I remember very fondly, that was kind of at the beginning, you'd have, you know, that was someone else did that stuff. So that's, you know, GeoCities or CompuServe, they do the internet. We're a X company, you know, we deal in wood or steel or money or whatever. We are not an internet company. And then it kind of came in and people became a bit aware, maybe actually this is something that people who are going to want to use. So what we need to do is perhaps have an internet department. And believe it or not, there were internet departments at companies. And, you know, this is kind of wow. where we maybe are slightly now with AI. It's kind of like, okay, we've got, we're doing AI, we're doing internet. We've got a bunch of people who sit in that team over there somewhere who are looking at this, and that's their job and that's their business. I'll get on with marketing, sales, HR, or whatever it is that your job is. And those guys over there do the internet and, you know, have fun. And, you know, we know what happened. It broke out of there. People's personal use every day. They became familiar with using this stuff. They saw the advantages of these tools. They saw competitors using these tools and getting advantage. You know, the corporate world is rife with lots of examples of companies who didn't and what happened to them. So, you know, it quickly became everyone's issue, everyone's concern, and everyone's job to actually embrace this technology. And that's exactly the same as is going to happen with AI, in my opinion. And the thing is that that's going to be a bit more of a significant change than the internet for me, because we're quite used to a slightly different relationship with our technology that's actually shifting. We're used to kind of rules-based systems. So, you know, if you think you get a calculator and you type in a sum on that calculator, you get kind of either garbage out or you get the answer. And that's the way it works. These systems are rules-based. They are, you know, finite entry. And I know that the answer is going to be right because it's about the implementation of a set of rules. And that's really cool for the way that organizations view themselves with that Taylorism, that scientific method for organizing work. Because, you know, Taylorism is very much around restricting the fuzziness of human beings to fit within flowcharts and process diagrams that give certainty to interfaces. And those certain, definite, you know, dependable interfaces are what work really well with traditional IT. And the trouble we have with machine learning and with artificial intelligence, and machine learning especially, the current driver for growth in artificial intelligence, is that it's a slightly different technology. It's not this rules-based, it's not that precision. It is an approximation where we aren't able to actually understand or to define the rules that underlie what we see. It is, you know, we take a bunch of data, and I'm probably going to say stuff that that people who are experts in machine learning are going to shake their heads at. But as a generalization, you know, we take the data, simplify people's decades of study here in 2 minutes. We take the data and essentially we look to see what we can observe in terms of predictable relationships. But it isn't the actual rules that are driving the outcomes. It is an approximation, it is a model. And, you know, that doesn't quite fit with this Taylorism approach, this very precise, you know, process approach to work. It works really well with old IT. It works really well with that kind of, if you know the rules, you kind of master the universe approach. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, as an aside, by the way, it's quite interesting this year with COVID. You know, I can't do a podcast in 2020 without mentioning COVID. Although it's going to look really dated in about 10 years' time when everyone's talking about COVID and everything.
Yeah, it will be interesting to go back to those conversations, right?
how to date it, yeah. How to locate your podcast exactly in 2020, they're talking about COVID. But the argument is that actually this approach to, you know, really, really, this kind of precision, this standardization, this efficiency drives actually led to quite a brittle society. I mean, this is sort of aside from AI, that we actually have quite a brittle society as a result. You know, we struggle with variance. Our organizations, our companies are really set up with things like just-in-time manufacturing and this real precision, real standardization approach. And, you know, that's what we've learned to be really good at in corporate and organizational behaviors. But we're going to have to unlearn a bit of that with machine learning, because it is an approximation. You have a return of judgment. Previously, unless your, you know, computer was pouring flames and, you know, or showing garbage, the assumption was it was basically working. And if it wasn't working, well, that was a fault. and a fault had to be reported to IT as a bug. It's not working, it's crashed, it's giving me garbage or whatever. But essentially, those were the two kind of states. And again, a purist would probably say, you know, you're not being wholly accurate here. But for the majority of users, it was either not working. And that's a tricky thing with machine learning. It's actually, it brings back judgment. It brings back judgment because it never claims to be right. It never claims that it's, you know, it's a rule. That's the nature of the technology. And what that drives for organizations is a need to make judgment calls and decisions. And those judgment calls and decisions are things that are right from the very top of the org right down to the bottom. It's from, you know, at a strategic level saying, you know, should we as an organization who is trusted in doing X, Y, Z actually be using this technology in the first place? Is this the right technology for an organization such as ours? It is, you know, the product managers, you know, our product is something that's really quite, you know, vital to people. And, you know, it deals with people who are vulnerable. Should we be using this technology? And yeah, it's the technologist, you know, how we build the models. Is this a compromise? Is this a trade-off we're prepared to make? But also it's the within the organization, members of staff, individual members of staff who think, you know, is this an appropriate situation to be? So, you know, we talk about human in the loop, et cetera, but this is really about having the ability to make informed, conscientious decisions. And that's the first thing that you really in AI ethics. It's not a story of, you know, well, who's ethics and discussing who's, you know, gets to define the ethics. It's not a question of making explainability tools. I mean, it's all very cool, but for organizations, the first question is, you know, what are these decisions? Why do we need to make them? Where the organization should these decisions be made? How do we make sure those decisions are ones that, you know, the people who are empowered and able to make informed decisions? And finally, how do we make sure they stick? You know, those are the big questions for organizations, beyond sort of like the discussions on, you know, which principles, whose ethics, what tools should we use? What will the regulations look like? All very, very important discussions. But for organizations, it's about making those right decisions. And that's for all organizations, not just those who are creating AI. So this is a good monologue here, but so, you know, I think we come under the impression that sometimes this only matters to the companies who are doing really cool tech, but actually this stuff is pervasive. Okay, it's everywhere. It's increasingly being used in a lot of products. Now, sometimes it's really benign stuff. I mean, I think Microsoft are going to start to use, you know, more and more AI to help suggest in Office. That's fantastic. It's pretty benign, one would hope. But a lot of the time, organizations will be offered quite specific capabilities that actually should prompt them to make decisions and judgment calls as to whether those technologies align to their goals. So it's not just those who are producing, it's also organizations who are making purchasing decisions.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I was going to add that I think on top of that, there's a lot of misconceptions about even what is artificial intelligence, because a lot of companies have just been suggested that they don't actually know what, you know, if that is the correct tool to begin with, right? And so, and they can't quite make that assessment a lot of the times. So I think you have that challenge as well in sort of building understanding and education around this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point on what is artificial intelligence. It's actually a bit of a red herring. To, you know, it's sort of a distraction in some ways. The recommended approach that I've seen a lot of good data scientists make is, you know, you keep the tools as simple as possible. You don't use tools that you don't need to. So, you know, if straightforward linear regression actually models sufficiently with the constraints on, you know, accuracy, but also explainability, etc. If that's fit for purpose, don't go down the route of sort of using, you know, complex deep learning models, etc. So I think I think for organizations, I don't think it's a question of should we use AI versus other. I think it's a question of are we happy that the technology that gives us the results we need also adheres to those explicit positions that we've made on things like fairness, explainability, etc. It's not kind of like, are we an AI company or not? It is a case of proportionality in the technology you use to meet your goals as an organization, what your vision is, what your principles are, and what you stand for.
Yeah. Okay. So Matthew, you touched on a few of the challenges that we have in the industry. I mean, I think these, a lot of these are more specific to organizations. When we're talking a bit more broad in respect of AI and ethics, what are the challenges that you're seeing? I mean, on a more broad level in terms of involving international organizations, the principles, the frameworks, how do we go about all of this?
Yeah, good question. It's quite interesting the approach that's been taken. And again, I'm really passionate about this subject, so I kind of like look to the next step often, and maybe I should spend some more time reflecting how far we've come, and we have come a long way. So that's really positive. But if we're looking kind of next steps, it's quite interesting that so many organizations and countries and different groups, NGOs, etc., have gone this principles based direction. I think there's sort of a risk involved that we get to the point where we convince people and we don't have any further advice to offer. So I mean, a fatal error, and this is something that I've kind of experienced throughout my career. A fatal error is actually to spend time convincing people of your position and the merits of your thinking, but then to have nothing on hand when the person says, "Got it, I'm signed up. What do we need to do?" That's an absolute fatal error. And I think we're slightly there with organizations. Are we at the point where all leaders across public and private industry understand the subject, where they fully grasp the concepts of things like bias, of fairness, explainability, transparency, etc.? No, probably not. Are we at the point where enough people actually have insight where we can actually start to convert some of that into action? I absolutely think we are. And I think we're a little naive as a discipline, AI ethics, in our approach there. So I think we're naive somewhat to the realities of what this technology looks like in organizations, both public and private organizations. We're a little bit naive about that, but we're also a little bit naive about what it means or what it takes to actually make a company or get a company or an organization to embrace a new way of doing things. That's not a trivial matter. So, I did, as I said, quite a lot of time doing change and transformation, and some of that was around outsourcing. And these were really high pressure events. These projects were kind of measured in weeks and months. And you learned pretty quickly that you didn't really have much time to actually take your suggestions, your position, your kind of your point, and actually make it a reality. So, you'd spend time sort of convincing a sponsor, a stakeholder, they need to take certain things on the impact of this on the organization seriously. And then they say yes. And then the problem starts because you've got 4 weeks, 6, 8 weeks, and that's your window of opportunity. And if you don't have pragmatic, practical solutions lined up, you basically lost your window of opportunity. So I think we need to be ready as a discipline that when someone says, "Yeah, I get it. We want to use this technology, but there are these risks involved. What should we do?" We need to have answers ready. We can't say, "Okay, well, we're going to develop a framework, or we're going to have a look, and we've got a few research projects." And I don't mean to sound dismissive, but we really do need to have those answers right away. And as I said, the other kind of thing that concerns me a bit is that I work quite heavily with standards organizations and other groups on developing standards and soft law, etc. And it's actually the reality of how these systems, or the pressures and the constraints that these systems are being developed in, is quite different perhaps from the ideal situation for where we could apply AI ethics. You know, when I speak to senior managers, the kind of conversations they're hearing, the kind of conversations they're having with their technical staff is around things like, you know, these data scientists cost a fortune. How can we leverage the work they produce multiple times to make it cost effective? You know, corralling all the data into a place where it can actually be used by this technology is mind-numbingly difficult and expensive. You know, how can we really sweat that investment by reusing the data? You know, once we've identified features in the data, that's a really big piece of work. How can we reuse those features again and again and again? You know, the environment that AI is being developed in isn't this kind of linear, someone has an idea, the data scientists kind of do their thing, the techies kind of do their thing as well, and it's released, and you know, it does whatever it does, causes damage, causes you know, a reward, etc. The reality is a very complex environment with lots of reuse of technology, with, you know, data that's kind of messy, incomplete, not fully detailed, etc. And it's very difficult then to take these standards, to take rules, to take suggestions, frameworks that have been developed with a more naive viewpoint on how the technology is developed, and apply these. And you know, that challenge is what we need as a community to overcome, that ability to say, got it, you know, I know how you're developing this stuff, I get that you're actually using third-party stuff as well as in-house, as well as legacy, I recognize that your data, half of it's kind of a bit, you know, murky, etc., who knows, and I recognize that you really need to drive value from this, but we can still make sure you do it responsibly. That's the key.
So you are now based in Australia at the moment. How would, in your opinion, how would you say Australia is comparing to the rest of the world when it comes to the developments in AI, and what do you think the country can bring to the table?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I mean, the reality is that historically Australia's, you know, it's got some really great leading companies in, you know, more traditional IT, some real outstanding industry leaders, but it does import and consume a lot of technology as well. That is a reality for the country. I think one thing that's important to realize with machine learning technology, so, you know, that most popular form of AI at the moment, one thing to realize is that it's a lot more difficult to be a passive consumer of this tech. So, I mean, if you're just sort of like, you know, using your phone and taking auto suggestions or whatever, or asking it to listen to music and tell you what it's called, okay, fair enough, you can be a passive consumer. But if you're a company who's using this to drive some of your core business processes, for instance, even if you're an SME, you know, those questions that we spoke about earlier, questions of appropriate use, etc., they're personal decisions, and you need to know the subject, you need to know what you're getting into to make those decisions as an organization. So you don't get to be naive to what this technology is, because if you're naive, you can't make those judgment calls. And if you don't make those judgment calls on appropriate use, is this the right vendor to be dealing with? Should we be using it in this situation? You know, do I feel empowered to say we're going to disregard what the system is suggesting? All these things, if you're not empowered through education to make those decisions, they are made for you by the vendor. You know, you are essentially a passenger on however they've developed that model, and as such, you are not managing your own risk exposure. And for the bigger companies, of course, for the ones who would like to use AI, you know, in a really personal way, you need to customize, you need to bring it into the context of your own market, your own customers, your own environment, society, etc. And of course, you know, that sort of suggests that a challenge for Australia, and actually for Asia Pacific more generally. A lot of the thinking around AI ethics has been European and North American in nature. It's really centered on this. So, I mean, you guys at the AI Asia Pacific Institute are sort of probably noticing very similar. A lot of the conversations are ones at 3 a.m. for us, because the conversations all happen on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, and what we have here is actually a lot of diversity. And that diversity kind of, yeah, like I say, that might initially present as some sort of problem. Like, oh man, we have to customize to such diverse audiences. And the American companies that are producing this have kind of got the luxury of just having, you know, quite in comparison, a quite a homogenous group compared to, you know, the cultures that we may experience. You know, what are we going to do? But I don't see this as a challenge, actually. I see it as a real opportunity. And this is what Australia can really do well in. We have Asia Pacific generally, but you know, looking at Australia, we have a real diversity of cultures here. And we're talking, you know, quite different value systems. We're talking very different perspectives on life and you know, what is important and how to relate to each other, how to relate to the environment you're in, et cetera. Extremely different ways of looking at things. And that's really, really good, because we have a multitude of voices. And that's an anecdote. I guess it's true. there's an anecdote anyway about Barack Obama's Situation Room. I'm going to tell it anyway. About Barack Obama's Situation Room. And, you know, he wanted that kind of diversity of voices in there. And the idea was having very, very different perspectives, people who had very different takes on the same situation. At first, that sounds like a really terrible thing to have. So, well, no one's going to agree. But that's kind of the point, is that if they do agree, you know you've got something which is good. And that's what we have here. If we can get a diversity of voices in, and, you know, sure, it's going to take a bit longer to develop the AI system, but it's going to take a lot less time to develop a good AI system, because you've got diversity, you've got multiple angles.
That's exactly what we need in AI, especially around this conversation of ethics, avoiding bias, and, you know, getting the system to really respond to this diversity. So you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think a lot of focus is put on diversity in the teams that produce the AI. And I think that's absolutely right. Not though to assure that we get good AI, but because there's no reason why we should not have diversity in the workforce working on this. You don't need a reason to have different people working from different social backgrounds, etc. You don't need to justify it. It just should be. But what we do need to get really good at, and this isn't trivial and it's not easy. So, you know, it's something that takes practice and skill and effort and, you know, a bit of sweat and maybe a few tears. Is to actually be able to distill those voices into useful, not feedback, but useful direction to give to developers. That's not easy. And it's really easy to trivialize that participation, et cetera. It's really easy just to say, yeah, we've asked 100 people. They think that green is better than gray. Fair enough, we'll make it green done. That ability to actually honestly, genuinely, and in the spirit of positive outcomes, synthesizing multitude of voices is a tricky thing to do. But it's a lot easier to do when you have a multitude of voices around you. So step one is to have the community with the views. Step two is to synthesize. And that's something we're really lucky to have here, because we've got that. So, you know, we're blessed with having, you know, millions of different voices, views that are quite different, you know, some of them quite confrontational, some of them quite challenging. That's a gift. And we can bring that to the large multinational organizations, that ability to synthesize different viewpoints to have a positive outcome. It develops better products. It's not a hurdle to be jumped. It's not a kind of like a box to be ticked of, yeah, we've done enough to kind of, we've asked enough people. We get better stuff. We get kind of different views in the stuff we produce is better. So Australia has that opportunity. I really hope they take it to say, you know, to advise the world, and you know, the world might do some advising back, of course, but to advise the world on their experience of integrating different viewpoints and voices to form, you know, a consensus, to form a position on how this technology should be used.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. I'll probably add that, you know, it's a positive sign that for Australia to be in early stages of this journey. You know, I have had conversations where there's this conversation that, you know, we get AI, first we bring AI, and then we start the ethical conversation. And then I think that's right. I think that the ethical conversation will be much easier, like you're explaining there, if we start to think about on the same pace as we think about the developments in AI in general.
Indeed, indeed. And it's we're so lucky to have this opportunity. Like I mean, you can have the best intent in the world to have, you know, diverse voices, but if you have to go and seek them, that adds an extra challenge, and challenges cost, of course, and that's, you know, you can't get past that. We don't have to go looking. We have diversity. We just need to listen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so a bit of a more broad question now. So when we think about the future, so, you know, what the future holds in respect of AI, mm-hmm. How do you see, you know, your work and other people in the industry, how this contribution is, you know, will basically represent a better future? And, you know, how do you see this collaboration unfolding?
Okay. Yeah, the future, always a difficult one, huh? It's much easier to talk about the past and reflect on the present as well. Yeah, it's the future always comes with guesswork involved, of course, and that's the nature of the technology too. But I think, see, one of the things that I get quite often is kind of like, yeah, well, what we're doing is pretty trivial, you know? I mean, I've got a very narrow AI and all it's doing is X, and that's kind of, that'll never hurt anybody. How could X hurt anybody? All it does is X. And I hear this very often. It's kind of, this is all very narrow stuff. It's very trivial. But, and this is a bit of a prediction. We'll see if I turn out to be right. I've dated it with COVID mention in the podcast, so we know which year it is. My belief is that the idea of big kind of AI systems isn't one that's going to stack up for the majority of use. I don't think we're going to sort of, I mean, maybe it's because I grew up in the age where the mainframe gave way to kind of smaller componentized computing. You know, it used to be there was a mainframe, that huge thing, which by today's standards was actually quite trivial. But at the time, it was a huge thing and the computing power was there. And, you know, we kind of got this more object-oriented componentized thing. And I really see the same happening with AI. I don't think we're going to have a single kind of machine learning thing. It's going to be sort of components, best of breed. You know, if you need something to process photos to identify human faces, well, there's the best vendor for that. And if you need something to process human voices, there's the best vendor for that. And you mash them together and you have a really good thing for, you know, ripping audio out of a movie and assigning it to different characters, for instance. So I really think this componentized sort of use different services is the way that we're going to find it progressing. And that's really important, a distinction to make, because what tends to happen with people is that once someone's kind of solved something, yeah, you get people who are really into it, who will just keep digging and going over and over. But there becomes a point where the sort of laws of diminishing returns say, well, this is solved enough now. And that doesn't stop it being reopened or re-explored in the future. But what it does do is means that people tend to accept it works well enough, and there are more important and more profitable, dare I say it, things to work on. And if you have that kind of component approach, you start to see stuff being embedded without really thinking. I mean, we use that library for whatever, because that library's always been there, you know, encoded, I'm talking here, by the way. Yeah, that library is just what we use. And people will look at it and will sort of update it, but the faith is generally set in it being fit for purpose. So what happens is when you start to use loads of these libraries that haven't really had this thought process about, is this fair? Is this the correct use? Is this, you know, is there bias involved? Is explainable, et cetera? As you start to multiply them with the complexity of using these components together. So what was a fairly trivial task if you look at it in isolation, a very narrow AI, and all that narrow AI does is X. When it's combined with lots and lots of these narrow AIs that are doing very, very simple things, but add up to quite significant impact, if they've all got this kind of thing baked into them, then, you know, we have to unpick a decade's worth of work to go back and say, wow, we developed that in a really naive way. We should have really thought about this. So it's really important this work happens now, even with the simple stuff, because we don't yet know where that simple stuff is going to end up. You know, it may end up being used in something quite complex, something that's going to have quite a profound effect on people. You know, that very simple thing you use to identify song lyrics might be identified to sort of, you know, used to identify someone on the street who's, you know, talking, etc. So I think the work we do right now is ever so important for the future. And there's lots to talk about general AI, AGI. You know, even if we don't get to that stage of kind of the superhuman, and I am absolutely not qualified to speculate on that. Even if we don't
get to ask you.
I'm not qualified to speculate on that. Even if we don't get to there, it is absolutely possible, probable even, that we will get to the point where there is enough complexity in some of these AI systems that are put together to have really quite profound effects ongoing in people's lives, not just one-off events, not just the loan application or the, you know, the decision on a particular role, but really kind of ongoing profound effects on people's lives. So that's why this work is, you know, so important right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation here with us.
No problem. Enjoyed it. It's really good. As you can tell, it's a subject I like talking about.
Definitely.
And even more, I like doing as well. I like to implement as well. So, you know, like I said in the session earlier, it's once you convince someone, then comes the challenge because you've got to deliver. I think it was, you know, what is it, G.I. Joe or something said that... understanding is 50% of the battle, and I think he might have been kind of overstating. I think understanding or knowing is about 10% of the battle, and doing is about 90% of it. So,
yeah,
time to get into gear, I think.
For people listening to this conversation wanting to contact you, what's the best way?
Good question. There's my website, techinnersense.com. So I guess there'll be a link somewhere to that. You can get me at matthew@techinnersense.com. That's the organization I founded that actually delivers on a lot of the stuff I've been talking about today. So, you know, if you're an organization who's convinced or even semi-convinced, or if you're an individual who's in an organization that needs convincing, I'm happy to come along and you know, be that help and be that advice that helps you to actually do something practical rather than just kind of going in that circle of we should do something. I don't have all the answers. There are answers available. You don't need to start with a blank slate.
You're also on LinkedIn, right? And you're quite active there.
I am very active on LinkedIn. I like to comment. I like to put stuff out. I like to put stories out. Always happy to have people as links. Please do reach out if you want to get in touch. Always like to talk. If you fancy a chat, I will gladly talk about the subject.
Excellent. So this conversation brings us to the end of season one for this podcast. So we will start again in January. If you're listening to this and you want to make sure you hear from us, make sure you subscribe to hear new conversations in 2021, which we hope will be a better year.
It will
Thanks so much, Matthew.
No problem, my pleasure.